A werewolf shifter romance audiobook written by Catherine Stewart. Prologue. The air tasted of shattered stone and ozone. Rorik's lungs burned, each breath a shard of glass. Before him, the corrupted moonstone pulsed with a sickly violet light, a diseased heart beating in the core of the fortress. It throbbed in time with the madness in his enemy's eyes. And beside it stood Malachi, heretic, shaman, his own Beta's brother, his body thrumming with borrowed profane power. "You see Rorik?" Malachi's voice was a triumphant rasp. "This is true strength, not honor, not sacrifice, the power to take and to unmake." Rorik raised his blade, the movement a testament to a will that had long outlasted the strength in his muscles. His pack was safe, the war was won. But this blight, this corruption, it had to be destroyed. He saw the web of volatile energy clinging to the stone, a storm begging to be unleashed. He knew, with the chilling certainty of an alpha, there was only one way. He would have to become the conduit. His life didn't flash before his eyes. Not the battles, not the lonely weight of the crown. Just a face. Her face. Sela. A quiet Omega, known for mere days, yet she felt more like home than 1,000 years on his throne. The scent of moon petal, of quiet strength, the shock of their souls colliding, a claiming bite, still echoing on his tongue. A queen. An heir. He met Malachi's ecstatic gaze. "You," he snarled, "know nothing of strength." And he lunged, not at Malachi, at the stone. He did not feel the impact of his hand against the crystalline surface. He felt only one thing, a silent scream of energy as it flooded him, a torrent of pure chaos. It tore through him, shredding the bonds between flesh and spirit, between life and the memory of it. It was not an ending. An ending would have been a mercy. It was an unraveling. And in the endless, silent gray that followed the blinding light, a single, soundless howl echoed with the name of the only thing that remained. Sela. Chapter 1. The air in the healing hut smelled of crushed lavender and drying river moss. A good smell. A safe smell. Sela pressed a poultice against the arm of a young packmate, a boy named Finn who'd fallen from a tree. Her fingers tingled, not from the herbs, but from the pain she was pulling away. A dull ache, like the memory of a bruise. She had to be careful. So careful. Taking on too much hurt from others left her feeling empty. Hollow. Like a cup poured out. That's why she loved the silence of the Whisperwood Pack. A quiet place, full of soft paws and even softer voices. Still, a strange dream had haunted her for weeks. A nightmare of a vast, empty gray place. And the sound of a howl that felt like her own soul crying out. She didn't know what it meant. Deep down, she knew the truth was something she wasn't ready for. Finn sighed, his little face relaxing. "It doesn't hurt anymore, Sela." She gave him a small, tired smile. "Good. Now, go find your mother." He scampered out. The familiar drain settled over her. She closed her eyes. Maybe it was fate she was born with this gift, this curse. No matter how hard she tried to build walls around her heart, the emotions of others always bled through. Moments later, the hut flap was pushed aside. Elder Maeve. Her face was etched with worry. "Sela, you are needed." Sela's heart jumped. "Is someone hurt?" "No," Maeve said, her voice grim. "It's worse. The Alpha of the Stonefang Dominion, he has called a war council. The other packs are coming. They say feral wolves, blighted things are threatening the territories. And they have asked for a dreamwalker." A cold weight settled in Sela's stomach. Stonefang. A pack of roars and sharp teeth, not whispers. Their Alpha, a ruthless king. To make things worse, being around so many aggressive Alphas would be like standing in a thunderstorm of pure emotion. Why her? Did they truly think her quiet gift could help? In a war? I don't know, she began, her voice a thread of sound. There is no choice, Maeve stated, her gaze firm. You will go. And you will show them that our strength is not always in a show of claws. As a result, Sayla found herself packing a small leather pouch with herbs she didn't think she'd need. Her hands trembled, just slightly. She was leaving her sanctuary of silence to walk into a hall of roars. She didn't know what scared her more, the feral wolves they would discuss, or the living ones she was about to meet.
Chapter 2. The Great Hall of Stonefang. It stank of wet fur and bad tempers, a symphony of growls, of posturing, and it grated on Rorik's last nerve. He sat on the Alpha's throne, a brutal thing of carved stone and iron, and watched them. Alphas, from a dozen territories, all of them looking for a fight, all of them looking to him for answers he didn't have. To rule was to fight, to lead was to bleed, to be Alpha was to be alone. His father had taught him that with every single scar. Truth be told, Rorik hated these councils. He looked at Alpha Vorlag of the Ironmaw clan, a smug wolf whose ambition was a stench in the air. Vorlag thought his desire for peace was weakness. More importantly, Rorik knew men like Vorlag only understood one language, violence. Because of that, Rorik had to be the ruthless king they all expected. He thought of Malachi, his own Beta's brother, exiled years ago for dabbling in forbidden blood magic, another problem left by his father, a festering wound that never healed. What was that magic Malachi sought? And where did it lead him, these blighted ferals? They felt connected to that same darkness. A guard approached. Alpha, the delegation from the Whisperwood Pack has arrived. Rorik grunted. Whisperwood. Pacifists. Healers. What good could they possibly be? Let them in. From there, the heavy doors opened. A small group entered, timid, their scents full of damp earth and herbs. Then, he saw her. In that moment, the noisy hall faded to a dull hum. She was an Omega, he could scent that much, but there was nothing submissive in the way she held herself. She was like a still pool in the middle of a raging river, her eyes holding a depth that pulled at something inside him he thought had died long ago. Her scent. Gods, her scent. It was moon petals after a rain. A quiet strength that cut right through the reek of aggression in the hall. Without thinking, his own wolf pressed forward. Curious. A strange protective instinct flared hot in his chest. A feeling he had never, ever known. They called her a weapon, a dreamwalker. But all he saw was a flame in the darkness. What's worse, he felt an immediate, illogical urge to shield that flame from the brutes in his own hall. And just like that, he knew. This council had changed. Everything had changed.
Chapter 3. The Great Hall was even worse than she had imagined. The air? It was charged with power and anger, a physical weight that made her want to curl into a ball. Her eyes found the Alpha on the stone throne. Rorik. He was larger than she'd expected, a mountain of a wolf, his presence a raw magnetic force. Yet, beneath the moonlight streaming from the high windows, she saw the exhaustion etched around his golden eyes, a king's loneliness. Next, they brought in the cage. Inside, a feral wolf thrashed, its fur matted with black, its eyes burning with a mindless rage. The stench of sickness and rot filled the air. This is what we face, Rorik's voice boomed, a low rumble that vibrated in Sela's bones. The Whisperwood delegation claims their dreamwalker can find a weakness. Alpha Vorlag laughed, a harsh, ugly sound. A weakness? You'd trust our fate to an Omega's bedtime stories, Rorik? As if pulled by a string, Rorik's gaze snapped to Sela. There was no mockery in his eyes, only a desperate, searching intensity. I will trust anyone who offers a path that is not simple slaughter, he declared. Step forward, Dreamwalker. Her heart skipped. Her body moved on instinct, a single step forward that felt like a leap from a cliff. Without another word, Rorik descended from his throne. He stood beside her, a solid wall of warmth and power. I will guard her myself.
He stood beside her, his wolf roaring in his chest. He didn't understand this overwhelming need to protect her, but it was as real as the stone beneath his feet. She smelled of courage and fear, a combination that made his head spin. She began to chant, her voice a soft melody against the harsh growls of the caged beast. Without warning, the feral lunged. The cage door buckled, hinges screamed. Before she could move, before either could speak, he acted. His body moved, a blur of muscle and instinct, covering hers, shielding her soft form with the hard lines of his own. Time stood still. The space between them burned. Her terrified gasp was a puff of warm air against his neck. Again, it happened. The moment their bodies touched, something inside him, inside them, snapped. It wasn't a sound. It was a feeling. A psychic explosion of light and heat, of a thousand lifetimes of loneliness crashing into a thousand lifetimes of longing. Her memories, her fears, her quiet strength, it all flooded him. He felt his own soul pour into hers. The weight of his crown, the scars of his past, the hollow ache in his chest. Her world tilted, his world shattered. A sound was ripped from his throat, not a word, a declaration, a guttural, possessive snarl. Mine!
Chapter 4. As the silence roared, Sela's world was nothing but the thunder of a single word. Mine. It wasn't a sound she heard with her ears. It was a brand, seared onto her very soul. Her breath caught, her thoughts spun, a wild storm of confusion and a terrifying bone-deep sense of belonging. The air was charged with the shock of 100 powerful wolves. Their eyes were daggers, their thoughts a chaotic roar that threatened to tear her apart. Her instincts surged. Between one breath and the next, she felt the hard wall of the alpha's chest at her back. The possessive grip of his hand on her arm. He was a furnace, a mountain, a storm and a shield all at once. His scent, winter frost and something uniquely him, was a suffocating blanket. She didn't know what scared her more, the stunned silence of the Great Hall or the tidal wave of emotion crashing into her from the man holding her. She felt his shock, his disbelief, and a ferocious, primal, protectiveness, aimed at everyone but her.
His own voice, echoing in his head. Mine. The word hadn't come from thought. It came from somewhere deeper, a possessive instinct he never knew he had. His wolf, a beast he had commanded with iron control for years, was now pressing against his ribs, roaring with a satisfaction so profound, it shook him. He could feel her trembling. He could feel the eyes of every alpha in the room on her, on his mate. To make things worse, Vorlag was sneering, his expression a mask of contempt and jealousy. Rorik felt a growl rise in his throat, a low rumbling threat. Not only that, he knew he had to get her away from here. Now. Without another word, he tightened his grip on her arm, not hard, but with an undeniable finality. He turned, his body a shield between her and the prying eyes of the council. Darius, he commanded, his voice raw. Clear the hall. The council is over. His beta, Darius, stared for a beat, his face a perfect picture of shock before nodding sharply. Alphas, you heard him. Out! As the tension broke, Rorik pulled her gently but firmly toward a side door, away from the shuffling feet and muttered whispers. He didn't know what he was going to say. He didn't know what he was going to do. He only knew that he had found something he never thought he'd have. And he would sooner let the mountains crumble into dust than let anyone harm her. And with that, everything changed. He was no longer just a king responsible for a pack. He was a male responsible for his soul.
Chapter 5. He led her through stone corridors that were cool and quiet, a stark contrast to the storm in her own head. Eventually, they came to a heavy oak door. He pushed it open, not to a chamber, but to the night itself. A secluded balcony overlooking the dark, breathing forest. The moonlight was a soft silver blanket over everything. For a long moment, they just stood. The space between them burned, filled with a thousand unspoken questions. Her heart pounded a wild rhythm against her ribs. What followed was a silence so heavy she felt she could touch it. Finally, he turned to face her. Under the weight of his stare, her wolf stirred, not with fear, but with a strange, humming recognition. His golden eyes were soft now, filled with a raw wonder she had seen in them only once before, in the instant their souls had touched. "I did not," he started, his voice a low rumble. He stopped, shaking his head slightly. "I had no right." "No right to what?" she whispered, her own voice trembling. "To claim you. Like that. In front of them all." Deep down, she knew the truth. It wasn't a claim of ownership. It was a statement of fact. A truth their souls had screamed aloud. But then, why did it feel so terrifying? She had spent her life shielded, quiet. His world was loud and violent and full of sharp edges. As if he could read her thoughts, he took a step closer. With his scent in the air, a mix of pine and cold night, her pulse raced. "I don't know what this is," he admitted, his voice rough with an emotion she couldn't name. "I only know that for the first time in my life, the silence in my own head is gone, and it's because you are there." Before the words left her lips, his hand came up, so gently, to cup her cheek. His touch was calloused from holding a sword, yet softer than anything she had ever felt. As fire bloomed beneath her skin, he leaned in, and his lips met hers. Not a conquest, but a question, a plea, a surrender. Her soul answered. She leaned into him, her hands coming up to grip his thick tunic. Rather than pulling away, she met his kiss with a desperate need of her own. What followed was a blur of primal need, a raw, frantic coming together under the silver eye of the moon. Then, the claiming. A bite to her shoulder, not of pain, but of pure, unadulterated belonging. A mark that said she was his, and he was hers. Across time and space, and even death itself.
Chapter 6. In the quiet that followed, with Salah curled against his side, her scent a soothing balm on his frayed nerves, Rorik felt a peace he had never known. The bond pulsed between them, a living, breathing thing. He finally understood what his father, for all his power, had never had, a mate, an anchor. But then, a sharp knock came at the chamber door. Darius. His face was grim. "Alpha, a scout has returned. Malachi's forces are on the move. They march on the Shadowfen Pass. We must leave within the hour if we are to intercept them." The peace shattered. The weight of his world, of the war, came crashing back. He looked at Selah, at her wide, fearful eyes, and his chest ached with a pain sharper than any blade. He had just found her, and now he had to leave her.
As the echo faded from Darius's words, a cold dread washed over her. An hour. They only had an hour. Her hand went instinctively to her stomach, a secret she had carried for weeks, a truth that now felt like a lead weight. She had to tell him. He had to know what he was fighting for. "Rorik," she began, her voice small. When her name left his lips in a questioning murmur, she took a shaky breath. "There's something. I am pregnant." His golden eyes widened, first with shock, then with an emotion so fierce, so blindingly protective, it stole her breath. He didn't speak. Instead, he pulled her into his arms, holding her so tightly she could feel the frantic beat of his heart against her own. He finally pulled back, his hands framing her face. He pulled the heavy signet ring from his own finger, the Alpha's ring of the Stonefang Dominion, and pressed it into her palm. "This is yours," he said, his voice thick. "You are my queen. You will rule in my stead." "But you're coming back," she choked out, tears finally spilling over. I will always come back to you, he vowed, his forehead pressing against hers. I swear it, on my life, on my soul, on the soul of our child, I will come back to you. His final kiss was a desperate, searing promise against her lips. He was gone. As the door closed behind him, her world, which had just begun, felt like it had already ended. All she had left was the cold weight of his ring in her hand, and the echo of a promise whispered into the darkness. Chapter 7. The first week, a blur of nervous hope. The second, a tight knot of anxiety. By the time the third week bled into the fourth, hope was a thin, fragile thing. Then, the horns sounded from the ramparts, the return of the warriors. Sayla's heart leaped into her throat. She ran to the battlements, her hand protectively over her still flat stomach, searching the weary lines of wolves, searching for a flash of golden eyes. But she didn't find them. Instead, she found Darius. His broad shoulders slumped, his face, a mask of gray, hollowed out grief. His eyes, when they met hers, were shattered. In that moment, she knew. The claiming mark on her shoulder, that constant warm pulse of Rorik's presence, it suddenly went cold. So cold. What followed wasn't a sharp pain. It was a deep, soul-crushing ache that stole the very air from her lungs. The world narrowed to the agony of that single, empty point on her skin. Darius stood before her in the Great Hall. He didn't need to say the words. The entire pack could feel the absence of their alpha, a void in the air they breathed. The battle is won, my queen, he said, his voice a hoarse rasp. The Unchained are broken. Malachi is gone. And Rorik, she whispered, though her bones already knew the answer. He destroyed the corrupted moonstone. He sacrificed himself to save us all. As if in a dream, she allowed them to lead her to the Alpha's chambers. Rorik's chambers. Her chambers now. They smelled of him, of honey and frost and strength, but the scent was already fading. With every heartbeat, she felt more alone than she had ever been in her life. The Alpha's signet ring on her finger felt less like a crown, and more like a gravestone. A stranger here, a queen of ash and echoes, in a pack of wolves that were not her own, carrying a secret child who would now never know his father. She didn't cry. How could she? The pain, it was too deep for tears. Deep down, she knew the truth. A part of her soul had been ripped away, and she wasn't sure if she would ever be whole again. Chapter 8. The months that followed, a long gray fog. Her belly grew, a constant living reminder of everything she had lost. No matter how hard she tried to connect with the Stonefang pack, she remained an outsider, the Whisperwood Omega, the grieving queen. So, she retreated. Her world became the cold stone walls of Rorik's chambers. Her instincts surged, taking over where her shattered heart could not. Without thinking, she began to build a nest. It started with one of his old tunics, one that still held the faintest scent of him. Frost. Him. Soon after, she was gathering his furs from the foot of the bed, the blankets from the chests, anything that felt like him. She wove them into a soft, protected hollow in the center of the massive bed. This was the only place she felt safe, the only place the crushing silence seemed to ease. A nest of memories, a sanctuary of scent. Because of that, it was where she was when the labor pains began, a sharp, sudden clenching that was both terrifying and welcome. Eventually, after hours of sweat and pain, with the help of the pack's midwife, she brought her son into the world. He was so small, so perfect, with a dusting of dark hair and eyes that promised to one day be golden. She named him Sion, her little warrior, her last piece of Rorik. That night, she held him close in her nest, his tiny body a warm weight against her chest. She finally drifted into a restless sleep, but then a strange fidgeting woke her. She looked down, and her breath caught. where her son's tiny human hand had been, there was now a paw, a perfect tiny black paw with clumsy miniature claws. As she watched, frozen in disbelief, his whole body twitched and shimmered. In the span of a breath, her human baby was gone. Curled asleep on her chest was a tiny, fuzzy wolf pup, its silver-tipped fur gleaming in the moonlight. Its scent was a mix of milk and something else, something ancient and wild, something that smelled impossibly like Rorik. Pups weren't supposed to shift for years. Years. What was he? What did this mean? Chapter 9. Come morning. Selah had a secret, a dangerous, impossible secret. Kian was her son, her perfect baby boy, who sometimes when he slept became a perfect little wolf. She told no one, which meant every moment was filled with a new kind of terror. What if someone saw? What if they thought he was a monster? The Stonefang pack was built on strength and tradition, and her son was something entirely new. Despite that, as acting queen, she could not hide forever. Weeks later, she was required to attend a formal pack gathering, a celebration of a recent hunt. She held Kian close, his warm weight a comfort against her hammering heart. The air was still heavy with suspicion. She could feel their eyes on her child. Then, Alpha Vorlag approached. His smile was a predator's slash, all teeth and no warmth. He was a big wolf, his presence a wave of arrogant power that made her own wolf press forward, defensively. My queen, he began, his voice a smooth, oily purr that made her skin crawl. You look well. And the pup. He is strong. His eyes lingered on Kian for a moment too long. He is my son, Selah said, her voice quiet but firm. An alpha's son. Of course he is strong. Of course, Vorlag mused, circling her slowly, like a vulture inspecting a meal. Still, these are uncertain times for the pack. A leaderless pack is a weak pack, and with such unusual circumstances surrounding the air. He let the words hang in the air. A clear, deliberate threat. The tension broke when he stopped directly in front of her. A pack needs a true alpha at its head. Don't you think? He murmured. A firm hand to guide it, to protect it, and to ensure the line remains pure and powerful. The space between them crackled. An unspoken challenge. He wasn't just talking about the pack. He was talking about her. About her son. With every heartbeat, she understood. He was testing her. Seeing if the grieving Omega would shatter. As if fate demanded it, she pulled Cian closer, met Vorlag's gaze without flinching, and let a sliver of ice enter her own voice. The pack has a queen, Alpha Vorlag, she said, her voice like steel. And its future, Alpha, right here in my arms. We are quite protected. Thank you. His eyes narrowed. He had not expected her strength. Before either could speak again, he gave a curt bow and retreated. But the promise of a fight to come was left hanging in the air, like the scent of blood. Chapter 10. In the days that followed, Selah felt the eyes of the pack on her, constantly, watching, waiting, judging. Her only comfort was Kian, the warm, living weight in her arms. But even that comfort was becoming laced with a sharp, cold fear. He was sleeping more now. His skin, once so healthy, now seemed paler, almost translucent. That's why, when the pack's eldest healer, Alara, requested to see her, a cold dread coiled in her stomach. Alara was ancient, her gray fur like spun moonlight, her eyes holding the sad wisdom of 100 winters. She entered the chamber and bowed her head, her gaze immediately falling on the sleeping babe in Selah's nest. My queen, she began, her voice a soft, dry rustle like autumn leaves. I have watched you, and I have watched the boy. Selah's arms tightened around Kian. He is just a baby. He needs his rest. He needs more than that, Alara countered gently. Selah, I have been a healer since before your mother was born. I have seen many things, but never this. She gestured a crooked claw toward Tian. Pups do not shift in the womb or in the cradle. It is not our way. Their bodies are not ready for it. Their spirits are not yet settled. As the silence stretched, Alara took a step closer, her old eyes filled with a deep pity. "He is fading," she whispered, like a candle flame in a strong wind. Her breath caught. The healer was giving voice to the terror that had been living in her heart for weeks. She felt it, clear as day. Tian was getting weaker. She could feel his little light dimming. "What can I do?" Her voice trembled. Alara shook her head slowly, the movement filled with sorrow. "I do not know. This is an old magic, a deep magic. I fear it is beyond my skill." She looked at Sela, her gaze piercing. "But you are a dreamwalker. You are his mother. The answer, I think, lies with you. You must find the source of this drain before there is nothing left of him to save." As the healer left, Sela was alone with the chilling words and her sleeping son. She had a choice to make, and she had to make it now, because she knew, instinctively, that the old healer was right. Chapter 11. That night, the moon was a sharp sliver of bone in a black sky. Kian was restless in her arms, his tiny body twitching, his breathing shallow. Desperation, cold and sharp. It gave her a strange kind of courage. She couldn't just sit by. She wouldn't watch her son fade away. She had to do something. She settled into her nest of furs, pulling Kian close to her heart. Instead of shielding herself, she did the opposite. She opened her mind, her soul, her every sense. She focused on the tiny, flickering life against her chest. "Show me," she pleaded to the universe, to the great wolf, to anyone who was listening. "Show me where you go." Her world tilted. She let her consciousness follow his sleeping spirit, a journey she had taken before. But this time was different. Before, she had only peeked into his simple baby dreams of warmth and milk. This time, she pushed, as if pulled by a string. She followed the thread of his spirit deeper and deeper still. She pushed and broke through a veil, and just like that, everything changed. The warmth of the dream vanished, replaced by nothing. Cold, dead air. No scent. The ground beneath her, colorless ash. There was no sun, no moon, no stars. This was the penumbra, the place between places, the nightmare from her own dreams. A profound loneliness washed over her, so immense it was almost a physical blow. Her heart ached with it. But then she saw it, a tiny, warm light, her Kian. His little spirit was curled up, a beacon of innocence in this desolate wasteland. But he wasn't alone. Drawn to the light, a figure solidified from the gray mists. A wolf, a great wolf, larger than any she had ever seen. Its form was ghostly, made of smoke and sorrow, its edges blurring into the oppressive nothingness. It limped, its movements filled with a deep and ancient weariness. A creature of torment, a ghost trapped in an eternal twilight. As the wolf spirit drew closer to her son's light, it raised its head. And its eyes, they weren't the eyes of a beast. They were the eyes of a king. A brilliant, blazing gold. Her soul screamed his name, a silent, shattering sound. Rorik. He wasn't dead. He was here, trapped.
Chapter 12. Pain had no meaning here, nor did time. There was only the gray, an endless, soundless, scentless eternity of nothing. He was a ghost, a memory, an echo of a wolf who had once been an alpha, a king. He drifted, tormented by phantom shapes that whispered of his failures, of a world that had moved on without him. He had fought them for ages, for lifetimes. But his spirit was so, so tired. But then, something new. A light. For the first time since he had been unmade, there was a light. It was small and faint, but it was warm. It pulsed with a pure, innocent energy that felt familiar, like a piece of his own soul, existing outside of himself. He didn't know what it was, but it was the first thing he had felt in an eternity, his anchor in the great empty ocean. He had to get to it. He had to protect it. With every step he took, his ghostly form ached. He limped toward the tiny beacon, drawn by a need so profound it was the only thing left of him. As he got closer, another presence flickered at the edge of his perception. It was not gray. It was the scent of moon petals. It was the feeling of a soul that fit his own. Hope, a dangerous, forgotten emotion, flared hot in his chest. Sela. Before he could understand, the presence was gone, ripped away as quickly as it had appeared. But it had left a trace, a crack in the endless gray. For the first time, he had a direction, a scent to follow, a reason to fight.
She was thrown back into her body with a violent gasp. Her chest ached. The room was cold, her skin clammy with sweat. But the chill was nothing compared to the fire now roaring in her blood. A wild, impossible, terrifying hope. She scrambled out of the nest, bundling a sleeping Cian in his blankets. She didn't even bother with a cloak. Her body moved on instinct. She ran through the cold, sleeping halls of the keep, her bare feet slapping against the stone. She threw open the heavy door to Darius's chambers without knocking. He shot up in bed, a dagger appearing in his hand as his Alpha Guard instincts took over. My queen? What is it? Are you all right? Her thoughts spun. How could she explain the impossible? Darius, she panted, her voice a ragged whisper. It's Rorik. His face softened with pity. Sela, he's... No, she cried, the words tumbling out. You don't understand. I saw him. I felt him. He's not dead. He's trapped. And Darius, I think our son... He's the only thing keeping Rorik from fading away completely. Chapter 13. Darius stared at her, his face a mask of disbelief and pity. He thought she was mad, lost in her grief. Maybe she was, but the vision of Rorik's golden eyes, filled with so much pain, that was real. Sela, my queen, he started, his voice gentle, like he was talking to a frightened animal. Grief. It can play tricks on the mind. Rorik is gone. We all felt the pack bond sever. No, she insisted, her voice surprisingly strong. It didn't sever. It was torn, damaged. But it is not gone. I can feel him, Darius. He's out there, somewhere, lost in the dark. He shook his head, running a hand over his tired face. Even if it were true, what could you do? You are the queen of Stonefang now. Your place is here. With the pack. With your son. She looked at the loyal Beta. At the friend who had served her mate so faithfully. Her chest ached because she knew she had to hurt him. She had to betray his trust in her sanity. On the other hand, she had no other choice. Cian was fading. Rorik was lost. Words were not enough. Action was all she had left. So, she drew herself up to her full height. She held up her hand, the Alpha's signet ring a heavy, cold weight on her finger. It was a symbol of Rorik's power. And now, it was hers. You are right, Darius, she said, her voice clear and steady, leaving no room for argument. I am the queen, and as queen, I am not asking for your permission. I am telling you my decree. Darius's eyes widened. He had never heard her use this tone. It was the voice of an Alpha. You will protect this keep. You will protect my son, she commanded, her voice like steel. You will tell the pack whatever you must. But I am leaving. I am going back to the Whisperwood. The elders there know more of the old ways, of my gift, than anyone. If there is an answer, it will be found there. Sela, please, he begged. It's too dangerous. Vorlag is circling. The pack is unsettled. To leave now? To stay now is to let my son die and my mate fade into nothing, she countered. her voice finally cracking with the force of her fear and determination. What kind of queen would that make me? What kind of mate? Before he could speak again, she turned and walked away, leaving him in the stunned silence of his chambers. Each step felt like walking off a cliff, but for the first time since Rorik had died, she was not just reacting. She was fighting back. Chapter 14. The journey to the Whisperwood was a blur of rustling leaves and frantic prayers. By the time she arrived, she was exhausted, her spirit worn thin. Yet, the familiar scent of damp earth and pine trees did little to soothe her. Her home. It felt like a world away from the harsh reality she now lived in. She found the elders in the Great Hollow. Their faces showed a mixture of love and deep, profound fear when she told them her story. She explained everything. The bond, Kian's shifting, the vision of Rorik in the gray, silent place she now knew was the penumbra. Elder Maeve listened, her ancient eyes closed. When Sela finished, the old she-wolf's face was grim. You have seen the spirit realm, child. That is a heavy burden. I need to go back, Sela insisted. I need to bring him home. You must teach me how. A murmur of fear went through the other elders. Maeve held up a hand for silence. Sela, what you ask, she began, her voice a whisper of dry leaves. It is not a skill to be taught. It is a path that is forbidden, for a very, very good reason. What reason? Sela demanded, her patience gone. Maeve's gaze filled with a sorrow so deep it made Sela's own grief feel small. I will tell you a story, the elder said softly. Many generations ago, there was another dreamwalker, a boy, with a gift as strong as yours. His mate was killed by a rival pack. In his grief, he did what you want to do. He forced his spirit into the penumbra, to be with her. The forest held its breath. He thought he could bring her back, Maeve continued, her voice a whisper. But the penumbra, it holds on to what it has. It does not bargain. It did not take his life. Instead, it took his mind. He became a creature of whispers and shadows, driven mad, lost to the echoes of that gray place. We lost two souls that day, child, not one. As the truth unraveled, a new kind of fear, colder and sharper than any before, pierced Sela's heart. So you see, Maeve finished, her voice breaking. The price for trying to cheat death is sanity. We forbid it not out of cruelty, but because we do not wish to lose you, too. Sela looked at the faces of her elders, at their love and their terror. But then she thought of Rorik's golden eyes, lost in the gray. She thought of Kian's fading light. The risk was everything, but the alternative was nothing. Chapter 15. I understand the risk, Sela said, her voice quiet but unwavering. She met Elder Maeve's tear-filled eyes. Between them, something cracked, the old dynamic of teacher and student, replaced by the grim understanding between two queens. But a life watching my son fade away while my mate is tormented in darkness. What sanity is there to protect in a life like that? I would rather be a mad ghost with him than a sane coward without him. A tear finally spilled down Maeve's weathered cheek. She nodded slowly. So be it. What followed was a harrowing trial. Maeve and the other elders pushed Sela's gift to its absolute limits. They taught her not just to heal, but to focus her will into a fine point, to build psychic shields, to navigate the treacherous currents of the dreamscape. Rather than just being a passive observer of emotion, she learned to be an active force, a walker in worlds others could not see. It was exhausting. It was terrifying. With every step she took deeper into her own power, she could feel the cold pull of the penumbra at the edge of her consciousness, a hungry void, waiting. Her wolf, long quiet, stirred within her. Her instincts surged, sharpening, honing themselves for a battle that would not be fought with tooth and claw. But then, just as she was starting to feel a sliver of control, a messenger arrived, a young wolf from Stonefang, breathless and splattered with mud. "My queen," he panted, bowing low. "You must return at once." Sayla's heart hammered against her ribs. "What is it? What's happened?" "It's Alpha Vorlag," the wolf choked out. "He has used your absence against you. He has called a formal challenge for leadership of the pack. He says you have abandoned us." As if that blow wasn't enough, he delivered the second. "And it's the pup, Cian. He won't wake. The healers, they say his light is almost gone." The world spun. Her breath caught. Vorlag's challenge, Cian dying. Her training was nowhere near complete. She was out of time. She looked at Maeve, her own eyes now wild with a desperate, furious fire. Without another word, she turned and ran. She would not be too late. She couldn't be. She would master this power on the journey back, because she had no other choice. She was no longer just Sella, the dreamwalker. She was a mate, a mother, and a queen fighting a war on two fronts, for the survival of her entire world. Chapter 16. She burst into the keep, a storm. Her frantic journey from Whisperwood had left her breathless, wild-eyed. Darius met her in the main hall, his face etched with grim lines. "Sella, Vorlag is... where is my son?" She cut him off, her voice sharp with panic. He simply pointed toward the Alpha's chambers. She didn't wait for another word. She ran. The nest was still there. But the scent of Rorik? Almost gone. Replaced by the sterile smell of healing herbs. And in the center of the furs lay Cian, so small, so pale. His chest, it barely moved. Her heart shattered. There was no time. Not for politics, not for fear, not even for grief, only for this one. Desperate. Act. She fell into the nest beside him, pulling his tiny, cool body against hers. Ignoring the warnings of the elders, ignoring the screaming terror in her own mind, she reached for her power. She plunged her consciousness inward, a reckless dive into the dreamscape. She found the flickering ember of her son's spirit and pushed through it, forcing her way toward the gray veil of the penumbra. "I have to reach him. I have to pull him back." But the realm was not empty. It was waiting. The moment her spirit touched the veil, it felt like being struck by lightning. A violent, chaotic energy threw her back. A silent psychic scream ripped through her mind. A roar of pure agony. And it was not her own. Her vision filled with a horrifying image, Rorik's ghostly form, not limping, but on his knees. Dark, shadowy tendrils, like smoke with teeth, were wrapped around him, pulling him down, dissolving his light. And for a terrible, soul-destroying second, his golden eyes met hers through the vision. They weren't filled with hope, only despair. A single, silent message passed between them. A desperate, broken thought. "Run." Then, the vision shattered. She was thrown back into her own body with a gasp that felt like swallowing fire. The room spun. Her body ached. Her spirit felt bruised, torn. Not only that, she had failed. In fact, she had made everything worse. She had opened a door for the darkness, and it had shown her, with gleeful cruelty, that her mate was already lost.
Chapter 17. Darius stood before the Council of Elders, his heart a cold stone in his chest. Vorlag was across from him, his arms crossed, a smug, triumphant sneer on his face. The Iron Maw Alpha had just finished speaking. His words were poison, twisting Sella's desperate journey into an act of abandonment, her grief into madness, and her son's mysterious illness into a curse upon the bloodline. "She is unfit," Vorlag declared, his voice booming. "She left her post. She consorts with strange magic. The pup is weak. The pack, it needs strength. It needs a true alpha to restore order before we are picked apart by our enemies." "She is your queen," Darius roared, his loyalty a fire in his veins. "Appointed by Rorik himself, you have no right." "I have every right," Vorlag countered smoothly. "I invoke the old law, the challenge of stability. In a time of crisis, When the Alpha line is broken or compromised, a challenger may call for a vote of the elders to assume leadership, for the good of the pack. The elders murmured amongst themselves, their faces troubled. They were wolves of tradition, and Vorlaug, despicable as he was speaking of ancient laws. Laws Rorik's own father had honored. He felt the political battle slipping through his fingers like sand. He had promised Rorik he would protect them. He was failing. Darkness. It was no longer just around him. It was in him. The gray had teeth now. For an eternity, the tiny warm light of his sun had been his only anchor. His reason. But now, that light was flickering. Fading. Moments ago, he had felt her. Sela. A brilliant, shocking touch of her spirit against the veil. It was a jolt of pure hope that made him fight back against the shadows with a renewed strength. But then, the darkness had answered. It had coalesced. Its leader, Malachi, a being of pure spite, had used her connection as a bridge. It had flooded the link with a vision of despair, a vision meant to break her. And the backlash, it had nearly extinguished him. The light. His sun. It was a pinprick now. The darkness seeped into his spirit, cold and heavy. He could feel himself coming apart, his memories dissolving into the endless gray. Sela's face. The claiming bite. The promise. It was all fading. He was losing. He was lost.
Chapter 18. She didn't know how long she lay there, shattered, empty. The world came back to her in slow, painful waves. The first thing she felt was the cold. Kian's body, curled against hers, was cold. So terribly cold. The door creaked open. It was Alara, the old healer. Her face was a mask of gentle, heartbreaking sorrow. She knelt beside the nest and placed a hand on Kian's tiny chest. There was no need for words. Sela could see it in her eyes. His heart. It is failing, child. Alara whispered, the words like falling ash. There is nothing more I can do. He is walking the path to the great wolf now. Her chest ached with a hollowness so vast it had no sound. She simply stared at her son's peaceful, pale face. Her beautiful boy. The door opened again. This time it was Darius. His shoulders were slumped in utter defeat. His eyes, bleak. Sela, I am sorry. Vorlaug invoked the old law. The elders, they have accepted his challenge. They will vote at dawn to make him the new Alpha. That was it then, the final blow. Her mate was lost, her pack was stolen. And her son? Her son was dying in her arms. She gathered Cian's limp body closer, burying her face in his soft, fuzzy fur. It still smelled faintly of Rorik. She had tried. No matter how hard she tried, it hadn't been enough. Her great gift, her love, her fierce determination, all of it had led to this, to ruin, to this cold, silent room where everything she loved was turning to dust. The healer was wrong. Her gift wasn't a candle flame in the wind. It was a wildfire, and it had burned down her entire world. She felt a single, tiny, shuddering breath leave his body. Nothing. The silence that followed was absolute. All was lost. So, she let the darkness take her. Chapter 19. Darkness, a charged, welcoming blanket. She let it pull her under. The cold silence of her son's body, a final, crushing weight. It was over. All was lost. But then, something. Not a breath. Not a heartbeat. A pulse. A tiny, defiant flicker of warmth against her own cold skin. A spark. She pulled back slightly, her own breath catching. Cian's face was still pale, his body still, but from the center of his chest, she felt it again. A gentle, rhythmic pulse of pure, raw energy. A soft, golden light invisible to the eye, but blazing against her spirit. He wasn't dead. Her thoughts spun. He had poured all of his fading life force, every last drop of his miraculous energy, into a single desperate silent howl across the realms. A call. A beacon. for the father he had never met. A fierce, protective love, so powerful it burned away her despair, roared through her. Her grief did not vanish. Instead, it sharpened into a weapon.
The gray was winning. The tendrils of shadow were pulling him apart, dissolving him into the endless nothingness. He was fading. The memory of her face, the scent of her, the name of his son. It was all becoming a long, sorrowful echo. He was tired. So tired of fighting. He let his golden eyes drift shut, ready for the end. In that moment, a shockwave hit him. It wasn't the cold malice of the penumbra. It was warmth. It was life. A brilliant, impossible pulse of pure, concentrated light slammed into him, shattering the shadowy tendrils that held him. It was the light he had been following, the tiny beacon, but now magnified 1,000 times. It was his son, a defiant, spiritual roar that screamed into the silence. I am here, and woven within it. A second thread, the scent of moon petals, the unwavering strength of his mate's soul, her grief a fire that burned away the gray. Something inside him shifted. Hope, which had been a dead cinder, now sparked. A growl rose in his throat, a real sound in this soundless place. He was not lost, not yet. His son and his mate were calling him home, and he would tear this reality apart to answer.
Chapter 20. With a single glance at the golden, pulsing light from her son's chest, Sela rose. Her movements were no longer weary. They were precise, dangerous. The quiet, hesitant Omega was gone, burned away in the fires of grief and reborn in the spark of a miracle. She turned to Darius and Alara, who were staring at the glowing infant with wide, disbelieving eyes. He is not dead, she said, her voice low and clear, ringing with an authority she had never possessed. He has sent his own life force out as a beacon, a call to his father. Sela, what does this mean? Darius whispered, his warrior's heart filled with an awe that bordered on fear. It means the time for defense is over, she declared, her gaze hard as diamonds. I know what I must do now. The elders were right. I cannot simply walk into the penumbra. It is a trap. Rather, I must pull him out. Alara gasped. Child, that is impossible. To exert one's will upon the spirit realm from this side, and the cost. The cost of doing nothing, Sela countered, her voice like ice, is my son's life and my mate's soul. There is no other choice. She began to pace, her mind a whirlwind of frantic, brilliant strategy. To make things worse for her enemies, she finally understood her own power. It was not just for healing. It was for connection. It was an anchor. Darius, I need you to gather every warrior still loyal to Rorik's name. Vorlag and Malachi will be at the fortress ruins trying to claim Rorik's body. You must hold them off. You must buy me time. Hold them off? Sela, we have barely a dozen who would still stand with us. Then a dozen will have to be enough, she snapped. She turned to Alara. And I need you. I need your knowledge of the old ways. I am going to use my bond as a chain, my son's light as a lantern, and my own life force as the strength to pull. I will become a spiritual anchor, and I will reel my mate's soul back to his body. Even so, I cannot do it if his physical form is captured or destroyed. Her plan was madness, a desperate, impossible gambit. But as she stood there, her eyes blazing with a queen's fire, they knew. They would follow her into the very depths of hell itself. Chapter 21. The Alpha's chamber became a sanctuary of frantic preparation. While the forest held its breath, Alara drew ancient, spiraling runes, crushed herbs and silver dust on the stone floor around the nest. Each symbol pulsed with a faint, calming light. Sela laid Kian gently in the center, his own inner light a steady, golden heartbeat now. Her son, her brave little warrior. He was the lantern. She sat before him, her hands hovering over his tiny form. This was it. Are they ready? She asked, her voice a tense whisper. Alara nodded grimly. Darius and his warriors have already left. They ride for the ruins. They will fight. They will die. All to buy you a few precious moments. Sayla closed her eyes, taking a deep breath. She could feel it. The thin veil between worlds. The cold of the penumbra on the other side. She reached out, not with the reckless desperation of before, but with the focused will of a queen. She felt for the distant, damaged thread of her mating bond, her chain.
The gray was no longer stagnant. It was churning. Angry. The darkness knew he was fighting back. But it didn't matter. He could feel her now. A silver thread of pure light cast across the infinite darkness, pulling at him. It was her. Sayla. And she was calling him home. He began to move. No longer a drifting ghost, but a predator. He followed the silver thread. His spiritual form gained substance with every step. He was coming. The phantom whispers of the penumbra clawed at him, trying to hold him back. But they were nothing compared to the strength of her call. He could feel her. He could smell her. Moon petals. And fierce, unwavering love. The ruins of Malachi's fortress rose against the bruised twilight sky, like the skeleton of some great dead beast. As his small force of warriors crested the hill, Darius's heart sank. Down below, two groups already assembled around a freshly excavated pit. Vorlag's Ironmaw clan stood guard on the perimeter, a wall of snarling muscle, and in the center, a group of dark-robed figures chanted, their leader, Malachi, standing over a long, still shape on the ground. Rorik's body. As if summoned by their arrival, Malachi looked up. A cruel, triumphant smile spread across his face. He raised his hands to the sky. At the same time, back in the keep, Sayla's eyes flew open, glowing with a pure white light. Her spirit broke through the veil. The storm had finally arrived. Chapter 22. The world became a whirlwind, claw and fang. Darius met the charge head on, a desperate, snarling wall of loyalty against a tide of brute force. "For Rorik!" he roared, his voice raw. "For the queen!" Meanwhile, at the center of the ruins, Malachi chanted, his voice a venomous hiss. Dark energy like black smoke swirled from his hands toward Rorik's still body. Any moment now. The ritual would be complete. He was losing. They were all losing.
She felt the battle raging outside the keep, a distant storm of pain and fury. But her entire world was the silver thread connecting her to her mate. She pulled. With her grief, with her love, with every ounce of her life force, she pulled. "Come back to me, Rorik," she screamed into the spirit realm. "Come home." As she poured her energy out, she felt a presence in the room. A shadow fell over her. Vorlag. He stood there, a triumphant sneer on his face. He had broken past her guards. "The queen, all alone," he purred, reaching for her. "The tragic Omega, your reign is over."
He raced toward the brilliant silver thread, the darkness of the penumbra clawing at him, Malachi's foul magic trying to drag him down. He could feel his body being defiled. He could feel his mate in danger. A roar of pure, primal rage built in his spirit, a power he had never known. He was not just an alpha. He was a mate, a father, a king. And his queen was in danger. As if fate demanded it, he threw all of his will, all of his rage, all of his love for Sayla into one final explosive push toward her light. In that moment, everything happened at once. As Vorlag's fingers brushed Sayla's shoulder, as Malachi screamed the final words of his ritual, the dormant body on the ground at the ruins convulsed. A wave of pure golden energy erupted from it, incinerating Malachi and his dark-robed acolytes in a flash of holy fire. Back in the keep, Vorlag froze. And with his scent in the air, the impossible scent of pine and frost and pure, unadulterated power, a figure materialized between him and Sayla. It was Rorik, not a ghost, flesh and blood. His eyes were not just golden, they were blazing suns. He looked at Vorlag's hand, so close to his mate. A low, rumbling growl rose in his throat, a sound that shook the very stones of the castle. "You dare," he snarled, his voice an echo of thunder and twilight. "Touch my queen." Before Vorlag could even scream, Rorik moved, a blur of fury that ended the threat for good.
Chapter 23. The storm broke, and the roar of battle faded, replaced by the groans of the wounded and the soft sigh of the wind through the ruins. The dark magic was gone, the air clean and sharp again. From the keep, she could feel it all. Vorlag's defeat, Darius's shocked victory, and Rorik. Rorik was home. Slowly. Gently. Sayla pulled her consciousness back into her own body. She was so tired. Her every muscle ached. Her spirit felt thin as spun glass. But her heart was full. She looked down. Kian was stirring. His inner light, a soft and steady glow now. She heard footsteps, heavy and weary, approaching the chamber. The door opened, and he was there. Rorik stood in the doorway, leaning against the frame, his body covered in the dirt and glory of battle. He was real, solid. His golden eyes found hers, and in them, she saw 1,000 years of torment and a universe of love. They didn't rush into each other's arms. The moment was too fragile, too sacred for that. Instead, he simply walked toward her, each step a lifetime. He knelt before her nest, his eyes falling on the sleeping pup in her arms. "Kian," she whispered, her voice trembling. "Our son," he breathed, his own voice rough with emotion. He reached out a hand, not to her, but to the baby, his large, calloused finger so gentle as it brushed against Kian's soft cheek. After that, his eyes rose to meet hers again. Without another word, he took her hand, lacing his fingers with hers. The feeling of his skin against hers, warm and real and solid. It was the most beautiful thing she had ever felt. The claiming mark on her shoulder pulsed, not with pain, not with cold, but with a deep, soothing warmth. He was home. The silence between them wasn't empty anymore. It was full. And just like that, her shattered world began to piece itself back together.
Chapter 24. Weeks later, the pack was healing. The banner of the Stonefang Dominion flew proudly, no longer challenged. Vorlag was imprisoned, his warriors swearing new fealty. The pack had their Alpha King back. Yet, Rorik felt like a stranger in his own skin. The penumbra had left scars no one could see, a coldness that lingered behind his eyes. A phantom echo of the gray that sometimes made the real world seem faded and thin. He was in the nursery, watching Sayla rock a cooing, happy Kian. The sight of them, his queen and his son, was the only thing that felt truly real, his anchor. But then, as Kian laughed, a flicker of shadow from a passing cloud outside caught Rorik's eye. Without thinking, his instincts now warped by his time in the gray flared. A low, menacing growl escaped his lips before he could stop it. A sound meant for the soul eaters of the penumbra, not for his own child. Kian's laughter instantly turned into a terrified wail. He burst into tears, frightened by the monstrous sound from his own father. Her heart skipped. Sayla looked up at him, her eyes wide, not with fear for herself, but with worry. For him. And something inside Rorik broke. The king. The warrior. The alpha who had faced down death itself. He crumbled. He backed away, his face a mask of horror. "I'm sorry," he choked out. "I didn't mean to." That night, Sayla found him alone on the dark balcony, staring out at the forest. "Rorik," she said softly. He couldn't look at her. "I scared him. Sayla," he whispered, his voice thick with self-loathing. "The darkness from that place. It's still inside me. I am not the mate you deserve. I am a monster."
Her chest ached at his pain. This mighty king, so utterly broken. She walked up behind him, wrapping her arms around his waist, pressing her cheek against his broad back. She didn't offer empty words. Instead, she reached out with her gift, not as a weapon, not as a key, but as a balm. She poured all of her love, all of her quiet strength, into the bond that connected them. She didn't fight his darkness. She simply surrounded it with her light. She showed him what she saw, not a monster, but a hero. A king who had walked through hell and found his way back. A father whose love was a blazing sun. He shuddered in her arms, a great broken sob shaking his entire body. He turned, burying his face in her hair, his own tears finally falling. "You are my anchor, Sayla," he breathed. "You were my anchor in the dark, and you are my anchor in the light." As she held him, she knew this was their new reality. He was a king with scars on his soul, and she was the queen with the power to heal them. They were not just mates. They were survivors. And together, with their miraculous son sleeping peacefully in the room behind them, they would build a new dawn from the ashes of the twilight.
Thank you so much for watching this video. We really appreciate you spending your time with us. If you enjoyed what you saw, we've got a whole library of other videos packed with more great content just like this waiting for you on our channel. So, why not dive into another one right now? And hey, if you want to make sure you don't miss out on our next upload, hit that subscribe button and the notification bell. We'd love to have you join our community and see you in the next video. Thanks again.